What is the origin of this great misconception that Africa is considered a country, according to you?
Yes, so really it started around the time of the beginning of colonialism and the emergence of the colonial powers who wanted to take over Africa. And so they met in 1884, 140 years ago now, in Berlin at the Berlin Conference. And this was a meeting where they sort of established many of the myths that we know about Africa today, in order to justify going in there and stealing the land for themselves. And so that's when they started sort of telling people that, you know, Africans are savages, that they are uncivilized people, and that they can't look after themselves. And so that really was the emergence of many of these myths. And because there wasn't largely across the Western world anybody telling people anything different, that myth sort of stuck right through the decades. And, you know, they started to find a new home in popular culture, in the way in which films and TV shows depicted Africa, as well as especially in the way that charity campaigns depicted Africa. And so these things have been allowed to constantly grow and grow and grow without enough people knowing that, you know, there is a truth on the other side of that as well.
Yes, tell us briefly about the genesis of this book.
I mean, for me, I've always been passionate about this topic. And I've always sort of been passionate about breaking these myths as someone who's from, you know, an African country. You know, growing up, I felt that people had never really appreciated my own personal identity. And, you know, I had always sort of felt that people had never really fully given us the space to tell our own stories and had been quick to tell our own stories for us. And so that's why, you know, I wanted to write this book. And so the stories that I focus on are the stories largely of how these African countries were created and the process by which, you know, these communities were brought together in a way that went completely against our own sort of natural groupings, to produce very large countries with as many different ethnic groups and languages as possible. You know, that really was something that was incredibly disruptive. So I wanted to focus on those stories. I also focus on the stories of the impact of sort of charity campaigns and popular culture as well on the narrative. And it's sort of these stories that I think really brings to life the damage that's been done by telling these, by spreading these myths and stereotypes in these ways.
Is that a form of responsibility of many African peoples who failed to measure anti-colonialist cautiousness because they wanted change but using the same categories as the oppressive systems of the West, for example?
I think that if I'm understanding the question correctly, I think sort of after independence, a lot of the people who had remained in power were those who had been empowered by the colonial empires. Largely speaking, people before colonialism happened had sort of been grouped within their own societies in a way that made sense to their own sort of cultures and traditions and histories. But the challenge that colonialism brought was that it entirely regrouped societies and sort of promoted and empowered individuals who had a very similar mindset to colonialists. And they often, in many cases, had too much control over these countries after independence.
In which way we can help the African states who are poor and in suffering?
I think the most important thing is to always ensure that you, if you are someone with a very specific skill set that can help in a very specific situation,
yes,
that a community can is in, then you should also ensure that you're always doing it led by those from that country and the people on the ground who have experienced whatever particular crisis might be happening, and ensuring that in that way you are doing it in a way that actually impacts those who actually live there, rather than sort of generally feeling that, you know, the problem is that a lot of people in the West feel that they can just turn up one day without any sort of history or experience in the crisis, and, you know, they can just take over and lead, rather than actually, you know, giving themselves over to those who are actually experienced and from that country and from that culture. So, you know, anybody who feels that they have a particular ability to help in a very specific crisis should certainly do so, but they should ensure that they're not turning up and trying to sort of take charge, but instead are being guided by those who actually live in the countries who will tell you exactly what it is that they need, like anywhere else in the world. You know, Africa is no different in that regard.
How do you look at Pope Francis' appeals to remove violence from Africa? For example, when he visited the Democratic Republic of Congo and South Sudan, he said, hands off Africa.
And I can't obviously sort of speak to his own exact meaning, but I think for me, if I were to sort of use the phrase hands off Africa, it's more similar to my previous answer that it's about not feeling that you should turn up in Africa and govern a country or govern a region, or you should see Africa as something that needs to be fixed, or to see Africa as something that needs Western intervention, but instead to empower, you know, people from the region themselves, give them the space, give them the resources to change their countries in a way that is meaningful for them. So certainly, you know, when it comes to those who look towards Africa and think that it's a place that they can exploit, or they think that it is a region that they can have their will done over the people, then I think that certainly, you know, in that sense, then, you know, I think that a hands-off approach is the right one.
Let's see some expressions, some kinds of language. Does the expression sub-Saharan African countries satisfy you? Because many people refuse this expression.
I think for me, sort of any expression that isn't specific enough should be really considered. And so, you know, anybody who... language is really important and intent is really important. And so I really, really believe that, you know, it is vital in each case that we ensure that we are using as specific language as possible. So if you're talking about West Africa, talk about West Africa. You're talking about Southern Africa, talk about Southern Africa. The challenges in Central Africa are not the same as the challenges in Eastern Africa. So, you know, Sub-Saharan Africa is, I think, is a phrase that's often used in a way that's not specific enough.
What is Africa's role in the Middle Eastern wars?
I don't really think that Africa has a specific role as a continent. I think that each individual countries have specific relationships with other Middle Eastern countries. You know, the relationships that we see in sort of Northern Africa will be different. So I don't really see a role for Africa as a whole.
Yes.
But, you know, individual countries, you know, have long-term relationships with the Middle East and very different histories. And so, you know, they can you know, choose to set their own sort of foreign policies in a way that represents those sort of historical ties.
For example?
You see sort of, you know, Northern African countries, you know, feeling, you know, culturally a certain relationship with the Middle East, whether it's because of sort of religion or, you know, in that sense, there is more of a sort of a cultural relationship. And so, you know, they might feel inclined to want to have, you know, a sort of cross-country ties with certain countries. But, you know, that is more sort of representative of those individual countries than some sort of continent-wide strategy.
Why is the struggle for democracies in many countries in Africa is so hard?
You know, the vast majority of countries today are under a democratic rule. I think in the initial stages, I sort of explained in the book as well, a lot of countries were created essentially to be as unstable as possible, especially the former British colonies were created for as much chaos and division within those countries as possible. Those divide and rule policies often empowered the wealthiest people and often enriched the most unscrupulous people. And I think that that really created a lot of instability, especially in the just after the independence era. Those are the things that in just 60 years these countries have had to overcome. And you know, as I said, over 90% of countries across Africa have adopted a democratic system, and those systems themselves, you know, will constantly be assessed as to whether they are serving their countries in the best way possible as well.
What is your best memory of Lagos, your hometown?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of my favorite memories are of sort of after school and playing with friends and family around my house. I think that's probably, the best thing about being in Lagos is, you know, it's a very outdoors city and you can be outside sense of community.
We lost.
And strong culture as well. My favorite memories are always sort of being outside, you know, at events or parties with family and friends and really enjoying that sort of strong cultural bonds across the country. It's something very special and something that I hope we sort of continue to hold on to, the sense of community and supporting each other, I think is something that Nigerian culture values a lot.
We have the name of the new director of the next Venice Biennale from Cameroon, Koyo Kowo.
Any opportunity that that communities across the continent have to curate our own stories and to give us an opportunity to showcase our stories is something that's really valuable.
And creativity and style.
Yeah, creativity and style and all these things. And I think that is something that's really, really important. You know, we've always had storytellers across the continent. It's not something new. But being given these global platforms, hopefully, I think, will help, you know, people from around the world to want to go and seek out our stories and our creators. And so as many opportunities as possible, I think, is really great.
And finally, your hopefulness for the future of Nigeria.
I'm as I sort of write in the book, my optimism about the future of Nigeria is really around what young people are doing today. And there's a generation of young people who are, you know, extremely creative and who are finding new ways to try and shift both the culture and the politics of the country in a way that I think will benefit the largest number of people. We've seen that in recent youth protest movements, and we've seen sort of the values espoused in those movements as well. And I think that it's really, it's really wonderful to see. And so if we continue in that direction, then I think that we'll see a lot of change in the country in the future, all these things always take work. And I think with that work, I think we'll see real progress.